Well, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to issue 2 of Hey Kids Comics. If you stuck with us so far, we haven't managed to run you off yet. I am your host, Andrew Farmer, and with me, as always so far, is the illustrious Jedi Cole.
Well, as yet, you haven't run me off, so that's at least one person's listening to this show as it happens.
But with all due respect, we've done a lot of shows together, and it takes a lot to run you off.
It does. I've worked with so many people since I started doing podcasting. I'm sure if somebody was going to run me off, they'd have done it by now.
Well, I hope it's like the zombie apocalypse. You know, if anybody's going to run you off, I hope it's me. I use a common courtesy to put you down as a podcaster when it's time.
That's right. Well, if I do get the deadly bite of the zombie, I want you to personally run a sword through my head.
I will happily do that for you. That's how much you mean to me. So we've done it. We've done an Origins issue. We've started our first story arc, and that story arc is Why I Hate Fanboys. If you've managed to get past the title and actually listened, we were talking more about the Mirror Universe fanboys, not the good ones, but the ones that maybe rub you the wrong way. So to continue down this contentious flame war path that we're on, issue 2, which is the issue you're listening to now, will be about sexuality in comic books, because nothing incites a riot like sexuality.
Indeed, especially depending on the sexuality and your own personal sensibilities. I think we can probably put it on if we were to put it on a scale, high end of the scale, meaning that your sensibilities lean more toward heavy petting is a bit dirty.
Yeah.
That will put you in the Archie's Pal Jughead category.
Correct.
And then, you know, I think Shazam is next. Just slightly more gritty, if you can allow that to be called gritty. And then the very bottom, just wrenching, hideous pile of filth and the fabulous
Moral
furry
depravity.
Freak Brothers.
Jeez.
And actually there's a new category even below that. A lot of people, you know, the old scale ended there. Thanks to Rick Veit, we have now the Brat Pack is now the bottom of the barrel.
It's horrible. It's really a chasm of depravity.
Well, as the New York really Times is. Reported, vile does not begin to explain it.
Well, I mean, okay, so a little bit of backstory on why this episode is happening. I am a rabid and completely enmeshed in all things Green Lantern. So when the announcement came that, and the headline, because they were burying the lead on this, the headline was Green Lantern is gay. It didn't go any further into that. It was just Green Lantern is gay.
And I think that in the New York Times, it followed by saying, vile does not begin to, no, wait, I'm sorry.
Oh, wait, whoa. Yeah, no.
That was not the one.
So I immediately, as soon as it hit, because, you know, these are my friends, these are my people. I talk about the Green Lantern a lot on our other podcasts that we do, the United States of Geekdom and the Collector Sector, and you know, anything that I do, anytime I get the chance to bring up Green Lantern.
Well, it's about
this
a, you know, it's going to be a kind of a kick in the teeth all of a sudden.
Yeah.
This is just sort of thrown out there in front of the unwashed public.
Yeah. They're like, well, where do you stand? What do you think? Where do you stand? And, you know, I honestly had not, it hadn't crossed my desk yet that Green Lantern was gay. So I had to go do a little bit of research. And in my research, I, of course, found out that the Green Lantern in question is not, you know, Hal Jordan or Guy Gardner or John Stewart or Kyle Rayner. It's going to be Alan Scott.
I thought for sure it was that guy that looks like a head.
Just the head guy?
Yeah. Can't remember
I thought it was going to be Tomari because he's a little effete as it is. I thought they were setting the groundwork for that.
Yeah, especially because of the several issues where he was espoused his love of musical theater.
right.
It turns out that they don't have musical theater on his planet, so it actually had nothing to do with sexual orientation.
No. You know, when he said, I can't protect Sector 8592 from the Red Lanterns, the spring collection drops today. I thought maybe.
They were just laying some groundwork. Turns out that his species asexually reproduces.
Correct.
So at any time, he could split in two and form a second being. So really, there is no homosexuality in his world.
That's correct. But so my initial thought, and then it shocked everyone, was that there's no big deal here. This is not a thing. This is not anything that we should even be on the radar with.
But I think really quickly point out that from the standpoint of why I hate fanboys, you think the whole Team Edward, Team Mike, or I don't know, Twilight.
I believe Jacob. I'm ashamed to say.
I was going to say either Jacob or Mike, and of course I picked the wrong one. But, you know, you think that that inflamed the fans. You had people, like, slugging each other in Burger King for ordering the wrong cup for their Diet Coke.
It's true. So, you did.
But, you know, nothing so inflames a fan base like the sexuality issue.
It's true. It's true. And that's why we're talking about this. It just becomes...
It's if you're casting about for why, well, why is this in this story arc? And why you exactly. sound a bit like Hank Hill, I don't know.
Why?
Bobby, why is this in that story
Bobby,
arc?
Bobby. I don't know why I became Elvis Hill there for a second.
Like, wow.
Bobby. So here's the thing. The two big ones when it comes to this are A, the Green Lantern. In recent history, A, the Green Lantern being announced as being gay, and B, the marriage of Northstar, which actually happened, I believe, this week. If you want to get technical with it.
Well, I missed the boat on that one. I should listen to the collector sector.
Right? does it matter? That's my question to you. Is it being done correctly? Are they actually using it for its intended purpose to forward a story, which is what I think should be done, is to forward a story, not just to draw in, you know, more readers with the flashy song and dance. The gay character being the new Chromium cover
exactly.
by my book. Type of thing. Is it a...
Are you trying to be like the French wine industry who benefited heavily when everybody decided that the best way to get back at France for not joining the Gulf War was to funnel money into the French economy by buying French wine and destroying it?
Correct.
Because at the end of the day, business people don't really care what you do with their product as long as you buy it.
Exactly.
And if you're buying Alpha Flight or whatever, or Green Lantern to burn it so that you can leech a little bit of Satan out of your life, or whatever one does when they burn books. And I have to agree with Henry Jones Sr. that you should read books instead of burning them. But yeah I went there.
Well, you got to class up the joint, don't you? You can't just let me, man. Well, now I got to look dumb. Now I got to quote somebody like Heinlein or friggin' Lovecraft to make myself look smart again.
We've got a little bit of show yet ahead of us, so you got plenty of time to counter that with your diplomatic response.
Here's the thing. It's pandering.
Oh, I'll give you that.
It's totally and without question in my mind pandering. If you wanted to make it make a difference, you would have made an extremely popular, or at least popular enough, mainstream character gay.
Yes.
And there are plenty of choices out there to do that with that would have made a lot of sense if you would have done them. Plus, you just, in the case of the Green Lantern, you had just relaunched your universe. Nobody really knows where anybody stands. You could have very easily, very simply done it. This was, in my personal opinion, to draw in, to pander to readers, to draw in. This is the snake oil. This is our new snake oil. It's our shock and awe campaign.
No, I couldn't agree more. I think, as you say, there are two ways you can go about exploring sexuality, especially homosexuality, in the comics. And one is this sort of pandering that's been going on since Northstar was announced to be gay. And in the actual comic, it could not have been presented any worse. There was no poignancy to it. It was almost combative. In fact, it was combative.
Yeah.
And it really detracted from what could have been a more noble purpose, and that is to diversify a universe. And to take a little bit different tack on it, somebody at DC one time realized that the DC universe is, frankly, a box of crackers.
Yeah, it is.
Especially in the supporting roles. If you look at the supporting pantheon of every single major character in the DC universe, it's a bunch of white boys and white
it
girls.
Is.
And to kind of both improve this lot and to work it into the story in a brilliant way, they introduced a character that was vying for a position at the Daily Planet that Perry was considering amongst other candidates, and his wife was sort of grousing at him about, you know, going in and hiring that nice young man. And the neat thing there was to add poignancy not only to this move to introduce this character, but to bring it into the universe itself. They had people picketing. There was a scene of people picketing the Daily Planet holding signs that said, Perry White is very white.
Which, first of all, is brilliant.
Yes.
Whoever came up with that
I know.
Sign.
It's like somebody must have, like, that popped in their head and they're like, oh, this is gold.
You know what? I'd be willing to wager that that's where the whole story arc came from.
Somebody said,
that popped into somebody's head and they went, we're going with it.
Yeah.
We're going all in with
and
this.
We're
going to create a whole storyline around
it. It makes sense and it's not just going to be tacked on. And that's a good example of how if you take something that's poignant, potentially controversial, and you bring it into the universe to pry bar a little bit
more reality into your fantasy to make it a little more street level. There is a good way to go about doing that and making it mean something.
Well, here's my question, and this goes for either Marvel or DC or anybody else who's decided that they were going to
pander.
Exactly. But, you know, there's a difference between the guy writing the book and the guy who makes the decision that the book should be written. We can never forget that fact.
That is so
you know, there's a difference. And my question is this. In the comic book, I'm not talking about in the newspaper writing about the comic book, on the website writing about the comic book, the guys in the comic book shop talking about the comic, but in the comic book itself, how do the characters react to this revelation?
Precisely.
Do they react? Yeah. Do they react as if it's a big deal? Are you overreacting and the characters in the comic book actually reacting in the way that they're supposed to be reacting to the situation? And that's always been very telling for me. You know, is that something that the characters around them are like, oh, you know, great, good for you, follow your heart, whatever they say, and then you're freaking out in the corner about it because, you know, it's a sin against comic book God or whatever you want to make it. And is it that big a deal? It's not. The answer is it's not a big deal. And this section I have to throw because I try to write clever little titles, and not that I'm implying anything, but for anybody that remembers Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends, there may be something here.
Miss Angelica Jinx.
I titled this section Peter and Sven, not Peter and Gwen. I was very proud of that. Thank you. So I'm going to just put it out there. It's not necessary to say
it. How did that happen in the Swedish Spider-Man?
Is there a Swedish Spider-Man? Because
well,
if there was,
it would be Peter and Sven.
It would
They're much more progressive there.
But that's the thing is it doesn't matter. In the way in which it's being done right now, it's pandering.
Well, another good point about the title is, you know, it should have been Peter and Sven, not Green Lantern, the old dude,
exactly.
And Earl that he met in the 40s, and they've always had this sort of closet relationship. There is a certain degree of poignancy, and there's certainly, if you're like me and you have to find justification for things, you can allow it to say, okay, there is poignancy to suggest that, yes, even in the 40s, there were homosexuals. Homosexuality didn't get invented in the late 20th century, people.
It's true.
And
it's true.
So it does at least allow for that, but at the end of the day, that is more pandering than had it been Hal Jordan, who
it is.
You know, his relationship with Carol Ferris was just a sham.
Well, but that's the whole thing about this.
But like you said, with the relaunch, there never was a relationship, so she doesn't just get remanded to beard status.
Exactly. But and the worst part about this thing is, and the worst part for me about it is, do you think that story, which would be a very poignant, very telling story about homosexuality, about being forced to be closeted in the 40s, in the 50s, in the 60s, do you think that story is ever going to be told in a real comic book fashion?
Yeah, in a compelling way.
Exactly. Is that story ever going to be told? No, it's not. It's just, hey, we're going to go to the movies together because we're guys. It, you know, there's not going to be that story's not going to be told. And that is where the real meat of the story would be, and that's what would really compel people to read it, you know?
And that's very much the difference between simply pandering. I mean, this could be elevated beyond pandering if that was part of it. I have not read the storylines in which this revelation hit, but if it's anything like North Star, and we're talking, God, nearly 20 years ago that North Star was outed.
Yes. Which, tell that story, by the way.
Yeah, it was a big deal, and I think the reason that we use a term like pandering here is because very much what's going on here is the comics are using controversy, the publishers are using the controversy because it's newsworthy. They probably, if they didn't just go outright and send out press releases, they dropped a few bombs here and there to make sure somebody who was in the right loops got the right information and spread it around. So by the time the issues come out, superhero that's gay, film at 11, and everybody gets excited about it for whatever reason. They're upset about it and they want to buy it to burn it, or they just want to protest it, or they kind of, what, gay superhero? Or, you know, somebody who is actually homosexual is thinking, wow, you know, they're finally speaking to us, and then discovering that community is not being addressed
at all.
It's simply being utilized as a tool to build sales, and there's no poignancy, there's no point in it. So in North Star, I remember finding that issue finally and picking it up, just check it out and see how it was presented, and it just seemed like there was some sort of building to getting the G word out there.
Yeah.
And then you have this panel where, almost Rob Liefeld style, you have this just bombastic expression with the clenched fists and the defiance, I am gay! And I will grant you that sort of thing probably happened. But is that the way to truly introduce the character and bring homosexuality sexuality into comics. Bring that extra little bit of the real world into comics and stop pretending that it doesn't exist. You know, at that point, it becomes like Joe Quesada deciding, well, my dad died of cancer from smoking all his life. Therefore, no one in the Marvel Universe smokes.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody, I think maybe three kids in the entire world took up smoking because of Joe Camel. I think one other kid in the entire world took up smoking because Red Skull looks so cool with that cigarette holder.
Exactly.
Every single other of the billions of kids who took up smoking underage took up smoking because their friends smoked, because their dad left a bunch of smokes around and didn't really keep track of them, so they snuck them out in a Pez dispenser or something.
That's
and
right.
Shared them with their friends behind the school. Joe Camel had nothing to do with that. They probably
no.
laughed about Joe Camel as they puffed away on their cigarettes because they felt so cool. Far cooler than Joe Camel. But you've got one side of the great fear that is generated, that this is the advancement of the homosexual agenda, as if, you know, the Nazis are, it's like the gay Nazi party or the, you know, the pink church or
yeah.
something are coming. And, you know, there is no gay agenda per se, but, you know, it panders to the fear mongers. It panders to the curious. It panders to the collector speculator that still for some reason exists to some small degree. And you get that wonderful little spike in sales, and then nobody gives a rat's about it anymore.
Correct.
And the thing
and
is with North Star, I don't know that issue ever, I didn't follow the book, so I can't confirm or deny that ever had any significance in later issues. It was just sort of like, I am gay. And meanwhile, back at the regular story, we're
exactly.
not going to fight the Northman or whatever, you know, some
exactly.
contrived
the
Canadian.
The Yeti, the Wendigo.
Yeah.
It's like, did you remember that I was gay?
Yeah.
And they're like, whatever, North Star, just shut
yeah.
up.
I mean, did he spend the next 10 issues saying he was gay, which is another thing that happens when there's big news in comics. Oh, did I remind you I'm pregnant? I wanted to remind everyone in the comic that I'm pregnant. Yes, you've told us for the last 18 issues, because this is comics, it'll take 17 and a half years for you to go to term.
That's right.
That's the other problem is, does this have any significance? I mean, Wolverine's bone claws have had greater longevity than Northstar's homosexuality.
But that's the thing. It doesn't tell a good story. And that's what comic books are. You know, and that's, if there's one thing that we can put out there and make sure that the reason that we're doing this is that's the whole thing, is that comic books should tell a good story. And they're not. Right now. And they're not because of this pandering, because when times were good for comics, there would be a lot of ridiculousness happening, but sometimes you would get a good story out of it.
Or a good
right
story
now.
Arc.
Yeah.
Or back in the days before arcing became the norm, you could get a 2 or 3 issue arc back when you weren't writing toward trade paperback. There wasn't that mandate that seems clearly, whether expressed, it's certainly implied by their own actions, that you get the feeling writers are mandated to write in story arcs so they can sell trade paperbacks and resell people what they've already bought. What does that, but you know, look at Arcade. He was like a 2-issue wonder.
Yeah.
And then, you know, went away, and every now and again they'd bring the character back. But yeah, there was a time when you could do that. But do you get lasting effect? Let's jump to another genre and look at Star Trek The Next Generation.
Okay.
And after Captain Picard was turned into Locutus.
of Borg.
Of Borg. Yeah, I should point that out because we don't want to confuse the... I am Locutus. Oh, of the Hamptons Locutuses?
Oh, of the Martha's Vineyard Locutuses?
No, I'm Locutus of Borg. Oh, how gauche.
Oh, how quaint.
But every now and again, within the context of other stories, he was still haunted by that.
Correct.
So it wasn't just sort of like Kirk's brother gets killed and we speak of it never again. Because by the time The Next Generation came around, the stories were being told in a more sophisticated way, and the concept of advancing the mythology was there.
Yes.
And that's a concept that's lacking. That's how kind of your barometer. Is this pandering? Do you want to know if the Alan Scott Green Lantern being gay is pandering? Then follow the stories he appears in.
Exactly.
Does his homosexuality have any bearing on anything? Do any other characters express any opinions on his homosexuality? Does it mean anything at the end of the day?
Well, let's talk about this. Comic books, and the next issue that we have is going to be on women in comics, which is another hot button right now in the industry. But is it more acceptable in a male-dominated industry like comic books? Because it is, no matter what anybody says. It's definitely an industry that is dominated by men. Is it more acceptable to have a female, a lesbian character,
you know,
than a homosexual character?
Saying that, I'm reminded of when my older brother started college, and he was telling me about a conversation he overheard in the dorm where this guy was talking about how, you know, man, there's nothing hotter than two women just macking all over each other, and that just is such a turn-on. But two guys is the, you know, that is the worst turn-off in the world. And that puts into perspective the whole idea of, is it more acceptable? And I think to a large degree it is. But really quickly before we move on into from gay to lesbian, because we're talking about why we hate fanboys, the other thing you run into a lot of times with these kind of hot button issues is people then latch onto them for all the wrong reasons.
Correct.
And, you know, one example of that is because there is so little worthwhile exploration of sexuality in comics, especially homosexuality, we're just now getting to the point where even heterosexuality is being adequately explored in comics.
True.
So we can't really decry the lack of homosexuality because we've barely even allowed the suggestion that not non-married superheroes are boffing each other.
Well, I mean, we shouldn't decry the lack of sexuality or homosexuality. We should decry the lack of good storytelling.
That's true. And that's what it comes down to. But if you're looking, you know, a lot of times people, when they do finally find or when they can't find what they're looking for, what speaks to their particular sensibilities, then cast about to find it. And I remember reading this article someone had written, or there was some question of, I think it was like a forum about, you know, gay superheroes or homosexuality in comics, some sort of exploration. And this one person had chimed in, trying their dead level best to extrapolate Rorschach and Watchmen being homosexual. Solely because of the awkward long handshake with Dan. But at the same time, the problem I have with people doing that is it becomes what I call the bone claw issue.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you look at Origin, everything prior to Origin, I mean, when Byrne and Wolfman were doing X-Men, every time the claws came out, we were reminded ad nauseum
that just they spurs were, and bony things.
Yeah, that they were artificial and popped from bionic housings in his arms.
Right? Correct.
That was a contrivance. That the rest of him was all Wolverine, but while they were in there messing around, they removed his forearm bones and replaced it with some bionics to mimic the normal movement of the forearms, but also give him these really cool claws to augment his already amazing powers. They just didn't really have much offensive capability. Then come the bone claws. Well, where in God's earth did that come from? And it's that same sort of issue. It's like, okay, you didn't look at what came before, and if you looked at what came before the author of this post in Watchmen, I'm going rather a long way to make a tiny point, I know, but that's me, you would see that there was some derisive comment on Rorschach's part in his journal about the possibility that Adrian Veidt, Ozymandias, King of Ants, was homosexual.
Yes.
So is it possible to be for something and against it at the same time? I don't think so. Yeah, I'm quoting all kinds of stuff today.
You are. You're bringing it.
I'm surprised to anyone who can go through every episode of this when we get up to like number 6 and identify all the movies and television shows I've quoted for the series up to that
point. Yeah, we'll figure out some kind of prize for that.
That's right.
So does it make a difference that is it more acceptable for a female to be a lesbian than it is for a male to just be, you know, a homosexual male in this industry? Is that something that is acceptable to people?
I think that the female homosexuality, at least from what little I know of the female homosexual characters, yet another bit of potential pandering was Batwoman.
Oh, Batwoman was...
Because she made the news, but she didn't... And this is an interesting illustration of exactly what you're talking about. She made the news, but it wasn't as earth-shattering as Northstar or Green Lantern, because she's a girl.
Yeah, not nearly as...
Like, oh, by the way, there's a lesbian superhero.
And I was like, all right.
Yeah.
Everybody, their first thought was, is it finally Wonder Woman? And then no.
But you didn't have, like, the talking imbeciles on Fox News decrying this as advancing the homosexual agenda the way they did with Northstar and Green Lantern.
Correct. You didn't. I just think it's in a male-dominated, you know, and I keep saying that, but it is. If you look into it, it is. In a male-dominated industry like comic books are, it is definitely more acceptable, from what I've seen, for a female character to be gay than a male character to be gay. And, you know, the question is why?
Well, I will cite an example here that most people listening to this, I would imagine 99.9% of people who ever listen to this, if it stayed on the line forever, would coming into this have never heard of.
Yeah.
because it's not your mainstream Marvel or DC. It actually started over at a long-defunct house called Steel Dragon Press for its first two issues. Then I believe Dennis Kitchen at Kitchen Sink Press, in his marvelous way of doing things like this, saw the tremendous potential in this title and picked it up and carried it for years through large gaps in release. And what I'm speaking of is a comic called Omaha the Cat Dancer, and it is a comic that I would highly recommend to people, but for the fact that it would be highly controversial to highly recommend it.
And exactly.
The reason I say this, I mentioned the Fabulous Furry Freak Brothers earlier, because that's an example of what was once known as Underground Comics, C-O-M-I-X, by the way.
Yes.
Presumably the X was in there to warn people that this is naughty.
Dirty.
Da-da-da-da-da-da. Porn. The thing about it was, the Freak Brothers was drug humor and sex humor. You had Fritz the Cat, which was just pretty much the same sort of thing. But there came a period in the Underground Comics industry where little by little it was actually getting a bit legitimized. And there were things that were written just very intelligently. Omaha the Cat Dancer, after like the first or second issue, its creator, Reed Waller, was trying to combine the sensibilities of funny animals genre, which is essentially where you have anthropomorphic animals. There was a sci-fi funny animals or anthropomorphic series called Albedo.
Okay.
That ran for just forever. And I mean, nobody had ever heard of it, but somebody was buying the damn things because they were like fox and bear and rabbit looking people all flying manga spaceships and having adventures or whatever they did. I don't know Albedo. I just know about it.
Cooking crepes. I don't know.
Yeah, they had a stuff. Clam bake in one issue. I don't know what they did. Basically, took the funny animal genre and melded it with the adult XXX rated comic genre. And, you know, the first issue was really just all about the sex.
Sure.
And by the second or third issue, I believe it was the second, he teamed up with a writer, a young lady that he was actually dating at the time, named Kate Worley, who would later go on, of all things, she took over the writing chores on Omaha the Cat Dancer. And two things happened. His art improved drastically.
Yeah.
And as one reviewer put it, no one drew the human form in repose better than Reed Waller. And,
really?
And yeah, the if you look at his depiction of the human form, he understood better than any comic artist I've ever seen how the human body works, how it responds to gravity, to movement, to repositioning. Everything about it, except that all of his characters were human bodies with, you know, cat faces or bear faces or goat faces and little tails and stuff, because they were anthropomorphic or funny animal characters. And the story then began to emerge. And
yes.
Kate Worley's storycraft was amazing. But what I'm getting at in all of this is the very first issue, there is a scene where Omaha and her friend Joanne have engaged in sex with each other.
Okay.
And throughout the series, there is some girl-on-girl action, as
sure.
it were. Of course, later after that first issue, it seemed more natural, more real, like the sort of thing that would happen spontaneously or by design. And it was well into the series, like 15 or 16, and, you know, don't call me down on this. I could go and pull my collected editions, but I'm not going to, because I don't want it to look like I've been looking at them. I want that level of dust that is collected to always remain the same.
No, seriously, nobody's been looking at these.
But seriously, though, by about the 16th issue or so, they had introduced a homosexual male character.
Okay.
He'd been around for many, many, many issues. It was well known that he was homosexual. I think maybe, you know, he was seen kissing another guy at one point. But they did an issue where, for the first time, they actually portrayed the homosexual act between two men with the same grace and the same poise and the same intimacy,
yeah,
that Reed Waller portrayed heterosexual sex between Omaha and her boyfriend, or between other heterosexual characters, or even occasionally two women. Most of the sex in the book was heterosexual sex, and
sure.
they took a tremendous risk in losing a lot of readership. But I think they also recognized that the readership of Omaha weren't looking for a stroke book.
Yeah, they were actually looking for, what is it, 50 Shades of Gray, whatever that book is that's out.
Yes. They were looking for something that told a compelling story that just happened to allow itself to be human.
Correct.
And recognize the fact that adult human beings have sex. They don't have sex all the damn time.
But they do.
But they do have sex. And there's nothing inherently wrong with that. And I bring this up as an extreme example of how, you know, you don't have to be as graphic and obvious, you know, you don't have to show the details of it any more than you have to show the details of heterosexuality. heterosexual sex in a mainstream book.
Correct.
But it is a great example of how somebody dared to allow homosexuality to creep in to the degree that was that heterosexuality existed in that context. And if you just, oh, gay superhero, and that's the end of it, you aren't introducing human sexuality in all its myriad forms.
Correct.
You're just simply looking for a buck.
You're collecting a paycheck.
Yeah.
Now, so all that being said, it's time that we have some fun. The thing is, you introduce these things. You introduce gay characters and lesbian characters into comic books, and everybody gets all up in arms about it. And what people are missing, and, you know, we're running a little short on time, but what people are missing is that there are things that happen in comic books, mainstream comic books that you can buy at the Barnes & Noble. They're produced by Marvel or DC that are way more pervy than anything you could possibly come up with. The one example, and I want Cole's best example of this, but the one example I have, and I was thinking about this today. I'm like, there are things that if the Million Moms or, you know, whoever, whatever group wants to get up in arms about, that they should really get up in arms about. And I was thinking about, it's not about being gay. It's not about being a lesbian. Tony Stark had an ongoing relationship in the West Coast Avengers with a woman who could at will turn into a Catwoman with a tail and ears and fur all over. What? You're concerned about Alan Scott being gay. Tony Stark was boinking a woman who could turn into a cat regularly.
He was enjoying semi-bestiality.
It really was half-furry, half-bestiality tigra sex. That's what it was. And who didn't have sex with Tigra back then?
Oh, I know. She was literally the Marvel Universe bicycle.
She was a cat on a hot tin roof.
She was.
So, if you want to be up in arms about something...
The Marvel Universe were Tomcats on the prowl.
Oh, that tiger's in heat. Can we make some more really bad cat jokes? Seriously, though, like, nobody's upset about this. This is an anthropomorphic Catwoman, not like Catwoman in DC, that's a woman that dresses up in a costume that looks vaguely like a cat. She's a woman cat. Not a cat woman. She's a woman cat that literally gets passed around the entire Marvel Universe. And we have a problem with Northstar being gay. Is that how it's going to be?
Well, I think,
so that
know,
one struck me as
Tigra
funny.
Was very subtle because no one sent out a press release saying, oh, by the way, Tigra is a slut on wheels.
That's true.
And so, you know, nobody was seeking the controversy. Somehow the editors let that one go. They were happy with it. I mean, who didn't want Tigra?
Hey, when did that come out? It came out in the mid-90s when the West Coast... Well, actually earlier than that. Let's call it late 80s, early 90s. Who was the head of Marvel back then?
It's
your favorite.
Was that when Quesada took over?
No.
When Jim Shooter was still with us.
Jim Shooter.
Or as Job the Hutt says, Jim Shooter.
That's everything was perfectly acceptable back then.
I think, the thing is, it ran the gamut when Shooter was there. I mean, the level to which illogical decisions went both ways. You know, some things were just completely excised from the Marvel Universe that should have been there, and other things were just, I didn't even realize that was going on.
That's right. So what's your favorite one like that? What should people be incensed about and they're not?
Wow, that is a good question. As I dodge that for a moment, I will tell a story about Neil Gaiman talking about Sandman.
Okay.
I saw this interview where he was talking about when he was writing Sandman, and he had the only time, which, you know, was pushing all kinds of boundaries, but that's why they stuck it over on Vertigo, where it belonged. And also, that was the first opportunity for comics to really try to go beyond being funny books, as my dad would say. But he was talking about how he had written a story, and there was some inference to the character masturbating. And the editor or editor-in-chief or whoever, somebody from DC came to him and says, okay, we've got to take this out. People in the DC universe don't masturbate.
Really?
Yeah. And I was thinking about that when this particular topic came up. Was perfect for this, because here he was just being told by DC, apparently nobody masturbates in the DC universe, so no wonder you get characters like the Joker.
Exactly.
You know, if he could have rubbed one out, he'd have been a lot different person. He'd probably be with the Ringling Brothers right now.
You know what? Now that you mention it, I bet you Batman would have a lot easier life
if
he had a
moment of peace. He would be rounding up chain snatchers. and people, identity thieves.
That's right.
There would be no rogues gallery.
No, there wouldn't.
Because all those guys would have just stayed home.
Do you know why Batman is so angry? Because nobody in the DC universe masturbates. And if they could, he could masturbate. See, it's really, it's like a Mobius strip masturbation.
And that is a frightening picture in its own right.
And,
more frightening.
And he sits in the Batcave and just super Clark Kal-El's up there in the Fortress of Solitude cranking one out right now. And why can't I get a moment of peace without eight Robins and an Alfred running through the room interrupting what I'm doing?
Right. What's the point of having 20 TV screens if you can't have 20 pornos?
That's right. But here's one I thought of.
To Alan Moore, because God bless him, the man was brilliant. He knew how to bypass things, I think. He knew. He was a master of subtlety. And one of the things he did beautifully, I think it was in an issue of Swamp Thing, but there was a description of this character. Yeah, I believe it was after Swamp Thing made it back to Earth and he was like killing everybody with different plants.
Yeah.
Doing different ways of manipulating plants. And this one guy buried in peach blossoms, suffocated him in his bed under half a ton of peach blossoms that were just, you know, being overly generated by the peach tree outside.
Sure.
And,
as
you lead into that part, that particular scene, the narration makes mention of how he's sleeping with his hand between his legs as he had since adolescence.
Wow.
And I thought, you know, that was the first thing I thought of when I heard Neil Gaiman say, characters in the DC universe don't masturbate. At least not when anybody's looking.
That's right.
So, you know, you just had that wakey-wakey, hands-off snakey moment.
Yeah. How do you feel about the Metal Men?
Was Magnus doing Platinum?
I thought he was. I really think he was.
Almost certainly, because, I mean,
like, it was alluded to.
He made a bunch of guy. And then once he had them in the field, he had to realize, you know, my talent is wasted on superhero. What was I thinking? These things can turn into any shape or form.
Exactly.
And since I can't masturbate because I'm a DC
since
character,
it's been banned.
Oh, my God. Yeah, he very likely was because, I mean, God knows she fawned over him.
Yeah. See, that's the thing is, like, it's been alluded to. I don't know if it was ever, like, overtly stated.
Yeah, I think the only way it would be overtly stated if they did, like, what was that? All-Star Metal Men.
I'm banging this metal robot thing, damn it.
Come back later. Uncle Maggie's
busy. Come back
busy.
Later, Mercury.
Don't you dare slide under the door or I will decommission your metal ass.
I'll decommission you. That's right. And there's one more that I want to mention, and then we've got to go. And that is this. I want to just briefly touch on Mystique.
Oh, I did.
The character?
I did think of the controversial one. That
okay, go ahead.
Got
for
a
it,
few people's goats, but it never had the level of, you know, international controversy that homosexuality got. And that was an issue. And again, I don't know what the hell issue. I never followed this book, but I did look at the page that was in question. And it was an issue of the ever pandering Savage Dragon during the heavy pandering period of Savage Dragon. I think this was sort of like the follow up to the Don't F with God issue. And it was well known that old SD was banging some superhero chick who I guess was invulnerable enough to be bedded.
Yes.
And there's this whole, I believe it was an entire page spread, no pun intended, of them in the shower. Full frontal, him and back. She was covering up Little Dragon.
Sure.
And he has one arm around her rather sizable breasts, covering any overtly naughty nipplage.
Yeah.
That's a new word we coined here today, nipplage.
Nipplage.
And his other hand, you know, of course, you know, Savage Dragon's got like hands as big as like cars. And his other enormous hand is buried between her legs.
Oh, God.
So his thumb and the back of his hand are pretty well covering up her area. And of course, you know, she is in the O-face moment of ecstasy, and his fingers are just weren't drawn in any way to suggest exactly where they'd got off to. And, you know, that's the sort of thing you could probably go to Half Price Books today and your kids could grab a copy of Savage Dragon trade paperback and find that.
Exactly. But that's okay, though.
Yeah.
That's fine. You can have that in there. Just don't mention that the Green Lantern's gay or that Northstar's getting married to a guy or that Batwoman is, you know, is a lesbian.
But I have to pose one important question since we are talking about sexuality in comics. The Thing? Is this dork made of orange rocks?
And other exciting questions answered next time on issue 3. On issue 3 of the collector's sector. Or of, oh, wow. Of Hey Kids Comics. Speaking of, stay tuned and tune in to the USG's Collector Sector, which is a show that both Cole and I do, in which we talk about all things collectible weekly, and it's a great source for information and dick jokes.
Absolutely.
So you're going to want to listen to that.
If you want some insight on what's coming down the pike and collectibles of all kinds, you can find that over at our original home at the United States of Geekdom, www.unitedstatesofgeekdom.com.
Mm-hmm.
Every week we deliver up more antics and every now and again some information.
Exactly. So issue 3 coming out will be women in comics to continue this firestorm, this napalm apocalypse now raid on comic book sensibilities. And I hope you're getting a lot out of this. We're enjoying the hell out of doing it. I hope you're enjoying the hell out of listening to it. So from your loving host, Andrew Farmer, and your ever loving co-host, Cole Houston, say goodnight, Cole.
Good night from the ever loving hazel eyed Cole.
We had a little bit of an informal poll, and I think this is what we came up with to go as the outro to this, which is continue to collect, read, and above all else, enjoy comics. Good night, folks.